This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we discuss the current state of American democracy, recognizing the risks it faces today, while still offering a glimmer of hope along the way. Many of us want to do something, anything, to foster civic engagement and democracy, especially when things feel like they're spiraling out of control. I am asked all the time what people can do to help sustain democracy. Of course, we should vote, but Election Day can feel far off. What can we do every day or each week that will make a practical difference? Enter Citizen University. What started as a two-day conference in Seattle over a decade ago has turned into a nationwide movement to help people foster powerful, responsible citizenship in communities all across America. As its website, citizenuniversity.us, states, its dream is a country in which Americans are steeped in a sense of civic character, educated in the tools of civic power, and are problem-solving contributors in a self-governing community. Here to discuss the work of Citizen University is one of its co-founders, Eric Liu. He's thought a lot about what it means to be an engaged citizen. He's the author of Become America: Civic Sermons on Love, Responsibility, and Democracy, and he has a new book coming out in the fall titled Live Like a Citizen: 8 Ways to Change Your Mindset and Our Country. Eric, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Josh, I'm so glad to be here.
So tell us about Citizen University. How did this two-day conference turn into a nonprofit organization and ultimately a nationwide movement?
Well, I think, in a way that is hopefully pretty consistent with the things that we try to teach, which is bottom-up, emergently, rooted in people's needs and feelings, but also connected to the ways that they live in their communities. And our work at Citizen University is all about trying to strengthen the civic culture of real places in our country. I think one of the challenges, and you know this well, as somebody who is a national expert on national politics and voting rights issues and so forth, and at the same time rooted in a place. You are deeply involved in the civic life of Kentucky and Lexington and other kind of aspects of your region. And, you know, we live in a time right now where so much of civic and political life has been nationalized. And what Citizen University tries to do is to teach people the basics of how to reclaim their power, their voice, and their sense of responsibility in the places where they live in a way that's rooted in place and is relational. And I can tell you more about some of the programs as we go, but that's our general thrust. And it grew out of this conference because as we started offering workshops and learning experiences for people from all over the country, we realized the demand for this was so much greater than we realized. And the web of people like you who are catalyzing change in the places where they live is so much vaster than people realize. And we felt like we had both an opportunity and responsibility to start connecting these dots.
I want to talk more about those programs that you mentioned. There's two that caught my eye: Power Plus Character Educator Training and Civic Saturday Fellowship. Tell us a little bit about either those or some of the other programming that you're most proud of.
Yeah, you bet. Well, I'll start first with Civic Saturday, because that's maybe one of the things we're best known for. Civic Saturday started back in 2016, 17. And what they are essentially is a civic analog to a faith gathering. It's not church, it's not synagogue or mosque, but on purpose, it has the structure and the flow and the arc and the feel of that kind of gathering, but directed toward our commitment to each other in civic life. And we've chosen that format and that kind of ritual container, if you will, because we believe, not metaphorically, but quite literally, that democracy requires our mutual belief. Democracy only works if enough of us believe democracy works. And that mutual belief, that civic faith, has to be kindled. It can't be, as you said in your introductory remarks, just a once every 4 or once every 2 years kind of deal. It is about how we show up. It's how we move mindfully in community. It's how we see each other. And so we created these gatherings in which people, strangers, come into a space. They are greeted, welcomed. You sit down next to somebody. You're invited to kind of talk about something that cuts right through small talk, a prompt that's about the hopes and the fears in your community. There are readings of texts that you might think of as civic scripture, drawn from throughout our American tradition, whether it's super well-known things like the Gettysburg Address or the preamble to the Constitution, or less-known texts. And then someone will give a civic sermon to try to help make sense of this moment and what it's like in Lexington or Tacoma, Washington, or Akron, Ohio, to be navigating these times. And then at the end, people form into circles, civic circles, to really think about how they're going to convert the inspiration and the provocation of that gathering into committed action in their communities. And so we started these in Seattle, where I'm from, where the co-founder of Citizen University, my late wife, Janae Kane, we are rooted here. But these gatherings started to spread all over the country, and we started training people from all over the country to lead them. And so that's what the Civic Saturday Fellowship is.
Let me ask you about that. If I wanted to start one of these civic fellowships here in Lexington, or let's say people in Louisville, Kentucky, what practical things should we do to actually start something like this?
Yeah, well, two things. Number one, for many years, we ran, I think, 20 plus, almost 30 cohorts of people. It's over 300 people we've trained from all over the country, big cities, small towns, rural places, almost every state in the union. And we would bring them to Seattle for a week of immersive training, both in the how do you do this, how do you organize this kind of gathering, but more than the how, the why it matters, why it's important to kind of get steeped in the ideas of our civic creed, in our ideals, and what it means to actually close the gap between our creed and our deeds. And so we do these deep trainings. We're now in the midst of shifting, actually, where instead of bringing folks to Seattle, we are looking for partners around the country who want to bring our team there. And so if you're in Lexington or Louisville, and you have a group of people you're connected to in different parts of civic life, and you're like, hey, we think actually it would be beneficial to train a whole group of us here in Lexington to lead these gatherings, then you can reach out to our team and we can explore that. We recently did such trainings with a cohort from Flint, Michigan, with a different cohort from North Carolina. So that's one way. The other way is that our team right now is putting together essentially a multimedia Civic Saturday in a box toolkit that anybody can just go to our website and download without having to go through an in-person training, because not everybody has the time to do that, and both read materials, see videos of other Civic Saturdays and how they've unfolded in different parts of the country. There's a template, but how Civic Saturday unfolds in Brownsville, Minnesota is super different from how it unfolds in Memphis. And so people will adapt the form to their own place. And so in the coming months, we will have that toolkit as well.
I want to talk about the language that you're using on the Citizen University website, and even in our conversation, you talk a lot about place, about character, civic faith and culture, civic love and joy. Tell us a little bit more about that language. I assume it's purposeful.
Oh, it is very purposeful. I mean, I think just let's start with two of the key words. Let's start even with the core word, citizen. Citizen University, citizenship. I think it is implicit, but I'll make it explicit. In our work, we are not talking about documentation status and United States passport holding, that sense of citizenship. We mean the broader ethical conception of being a member of the body, a contributor to community, someone who takes responsibility for their piece of the community. And we have a simple equation that we sometimes use to describe what we mean in that sense to live like a citizen. And the equation is power plus character equals citizenship. To live like a citizen in this broader sense requires both that you be literate in power, that you understand what power is, how it flows through your community, how you can be part of the flow, how you can redirect that flow, whether that's people power, ideas power, money power, social norms power, the power of numbers, the power of state action and government, the power of force and violence, which is out there now in more prominent ways, to be literate in power, but then to couple that fluency in power with a grounding in civic character, with a set of embodied habits and norms and values that are about not just looking out for yourself. They're about how shall we live together in a diverse community? How shall we sustain a community? How do you actually embody values of stewardship and service and contribution before consumption and sharing of burdens and sacrifices? These are nice words that only come to life in the little choices we make and in the habits of heart and mind, to use a Tocquevillian phrase, that we either commit to or don't. And so that language, power, character, citizenship, is super intentional for us. We have a worldview about what that means, both on an individual level and what each of us chooses to do every day, but also collectively. A big thrust of our language, our approach, is about civic culture. I know a lot about policy and the law, and I cut my teeth in my earlier part of my career in Washington, D.C., working on those things and understanding structural reform and the structures of policy and lawmaking. But because of that, I've come to believe firmly that as much as structure matters, culture precedes structure. Culture, the norms, values, habits, narratives, rituals that we all engage in, sometimes not consciously, that define what we think is okay and normal in how we live together. Civic culture defines the frame of the possible when it comes to structural reform and policy and so forth. And so if we have a civic culture that is nihilistic, short-term, hyper-individualistic, super self-centered, then, good luck keeping a republic. But if you actually have a civic culture rooted in place and relationship where people see each other, know each other, may not like each other, but commit to living with each other and solving problems together, then our experiment has a shot, right? And I think that emphasis on culture is another important part of the frameworks that we have.
We're speaking with Eric Liu of Citizen University. I'm so glad, Eric, that you mentioned civic culture, because this is something that my own research has really benefited from thinking about. I'm right now working on a project about non-voters and, this fact that, we celebrate strong turnout when, maybe half of us show up to an election. And what I've found is that there's some places, some states that seem to have a very strong civic culture, like Minnesota, I think has overall a very strong culture of participation through its corporations, through its institutions, and through its people. And not surprisingly, it has very high turnout. Other states seem to have less connective tissue around civic culture. So how do we create and then sustain it?
Well, first of all, to rewind, I really love that you're thinking about non-voters and thinking about the kind of cultural context that leads people not to vote. I think part of one of the TED Talks that I've given is on this theme, in which I say there's no such thing as not voting. Mm-hmm. Not voting is voting. Mm-hmm. Not voting is voting to cede your power, hand your voice over to somebody else who will claim it and grab it and use it in your name. Now, that's not to shame or to scold, but it is to say that, it might seem like you can opt out, but you can't opt out. And that a system in which, as you say, often a majority of the eligible voters have opted out, is still a system in which most of the people are telling us things are broken, things feel rigged. And if you actually want to do more than register that complaint, you have to be part of a culture that converts complaint into committed action. And that doesn't have to just be voting. It can be showing up in your neighborhood. It can be showing up to solve problems or mentor people or whatever. But I really love that you're thinking about that angle. And I think more people who care and know about voting and voting rights to the depth that you do, should be thinking about this through this wider lens.
And it's not apathy, right? This is one thing that really gets me, is that most people think non-voters are simply apathetic about the system. But I think apathy is a symptom, not a cause.
Yes, 100%. It is. We should, one way we could change the culture is every election cycle, say the winner of this election, once again, was the non-voting bloc. They outnumbered both the people who voted for candidate A and the people who voted for candidate B. Once again, they you know, the results of this election are that a plurality or even a majority of the eligible voters of Lexington, Louisville, Kentucky, the United States have deemed this system to be broken. And okay, as a consolation prize, candidate A, you know, is going to actually, you know, move on and take office. But we have a bigger problem here. And I think, you know, to your larger question about some states, some places have stronger connective tissue, you know, or healthier civic culture than others. I mean, that's a demonstrable fact. But that, too, is not a blame thing. That's not saying, therefore, oh, well, you know, Kentucky, come on, pick it up. Be more like Minnesota or, you know, Washington. Why can't you be like Minnesota, too, or whatever it is? Like, it's more of an invitation. This is another word I use a lot. Like, the way we shift the culture in a place around participation, engagement, responsibility taking is not to scold, but it is to invite. And the thing that you're inviting people into is not just, hey, want to join this thing that in which we're getting involved in this wonky process, but rather, hey, do you want to feel a little more powerful? Hey, do you want to feel like you're being seen? Hey, do you want to actually pull out of what's starting to feel like a life of social isolation? Hey, do you want to actually belong to something that you can start to feel proud of because you're making a tangible difference in your community? Come join us. And the join can be an electoral campaign. It can be a hyper-local civic action. That spirit of invitation is one way we start to change that culture. You know, there's a whole other conversation, Josh, we could have about like the social history of the United States and why places like Minnesota, you know, have had a strong civic culture for generations. It actually, there's a literal lineage that mm-hmm. goes from New England across the upper Midwest to places like Washington and Seattle, where you have a strong bit of that early Puritan kind of small community, town meeting spirit. But in both actually Minneapolis and Minnesota and Washington, you then have this influx of both Scandinavian and Asian immigrants who created a strong, deep culture of collective responsibility. And, you know, that's a whole other interesting sociological thing. But that's the past. Like, I'm talking about the present and whatever place you landed in, whatever its inherited social history might be, we all have the opportunity to choose right now to start showing up in new ways for each other.
So let's say you meet someone who's a non-voter. They tell you that they just don't care about politics. They don't have the time. They, you know, both sides are seemingly the same, so it doesn't matter who wins. And they just can't be bothered. What do you say to them in response?
I first affirm what they are feeling. You know, that what they're feeling is both real and pretty darn valid. And that the system does seem broken, and that, you know, though the parties are different in important ways, they are very similar in that they seem to not be responding to the deep pain that a lot of people are feeling. You know, and I think, look, Josh, I am of the view that all politics is pain relief. You know, and I mean, I'm not just talking about right now. Like, Donald Trump's success is partly attributable to his gift for identifying pain points and promising remedies. But the New Deal was pain relief. You know, the Civil Rights Movement was pain relief. And to put it in other contexts, the Klan was pain relief for white people who were starting to feel their status under threat and starting to feel like their place in the community was changing. And there were people who would appeal to them and say, we'll make you feel better about yourselves if you join this thing. And so what I'd say to a non-voter who feels this is, number one, like, your feelings, your pain is for real, and it's shared by tens of millions of Americans. But the second thing I'd say is, you have a choice now. Like, what are you going to do with your pain? Are you just going to curl up and kind of withdraw from the world? Or are you going to start finding some other people to find some affirmative ways to deal with this? And I'm not even going to push you to vote right now. Like, voting can be down the road if you're moved to do it. Voting, to me, happens when people already feel like they have an investment in the community and when the community has an investment in them. And so, to me, the thing I would invite this person to do is, let's find some low barrier, you know, low stakes ways to feel like you can be a little more invested in your block, in your neighborhood, and where other people around you can start feeling a little more invested in you because they now know you. They now will not walk past you or avoid eye contact with you. They'll be like, hey, what's going on, Josh? I haven't seen you in a few weeks. What's going on? Are you doing all right? What's happening? Right? And I think that human connection is the groundwork of anything you want to do in a democracy, including voting, but almost last of all, voting.
You're putting the finishing touches on a new book titled Live Like a Citizen, 8 Ways to Change Your Mindset and Our Country. Do you want to give us a little preview?
I will, Josh. This book grows out of not just the work that I do at Citizen University, but the hundreds of thousands of people I've encountered around the United States and who have shaped and changed me in the ways that I see things. And this book, the subtitle of it you named, kind of suggests this is not a book about electoral politics or even straight up political organizing or, you know, resistance actions or stuff like that. It is a book whose premise is we have a deeper problem, folks. We have a deeper problem in the United States, which is that we have forgotten how to be human. We have forgotten how to be and be with. And that is partly our super mediated, polarized national politics. That's partly tech and AI. That's partly economic inequality that's stretching us apart and making us not feel like we're all in the same boat. It's a lot of reasons, but the bottom line is we are dehumanizing each other and being dehumanized by each other. And so the 8 kind of ways that I talk about in this book are 8 elemental verbs: how to see, how to listen, how to feel, how to join, how to fight, how to change, how to imagine, and how to commit. And these are all things that Americans, small town, big city, left, right, red, blue, whatever, have kind of forgotten how to do. And those habits have been disappearing for several generations now. And so this book is an attempt to kind of name these things, but also remind people when it seems like things are catastrophic and dystopian, and the problems are too big for any of us, that no, actually, if you can choose to start seeing people with new eyes, to start seeing your place with new eyes, and start asking questions about why things are the way they are on your block, if you can start listening in a new way to people, if you can start committing to joining, if you can keep limber in your heart and your head and sustain an ability to change your mind when encountering new things. These habits, which are not being rewarded by our culture of social media, these are the habits that we've got to cultivate. And that's what the book is about.
Wow. I can't wait to read this. This sounds like it's going to be so powerful and impactful for really reinvigorating what we've talked about this entire discussion, which is, you know, creating and sustaining a culture of civic participation. Eric Liu is the co-founder and CEO of Citizen University, which you can find at citizenuniversity.us. Eric, thank you for joining us on Democracy Optimist.
Josh, thank you so much, and thanks for all that you're doing.
Josh, as its website, citizenuniversity.us, says, its dream is a country in which Americans are steeped in a sense of civic character, educated in the tools of civic power, and are problem-solving contributors in a self-governing community. What do you think they mean by Americans steeped in a sense of civic character?
I love the way that Citizen University talks about the mission of democracy. Civic character, what does that mean? It means that we all recognize we have an important role to play, and we need to be active in doing so. But it's not just about voting. I mean, I love how they discuss the power of community engagement beyond voting. Voting's the easy part. Once we get people involved in their society, involved in their community, then they're certainly more likely to show up to vote when elections come around. It's really about who you are as a person and how you navigate through society that makes the biggest difference. We talk a lot about people having character. You know, who are people of character? To discuss civic character demonstrates that that is an important component of living in a democracy.
And so what they're advocating for is what is actually happening on the ground in Lexington with the Civic Assembly.
Yeah, it's a great example of putting into practice some of these ideals that Citizen University is espousing. This civic assembly, comprised of 36 residents from Lexington, chosen, you know, randomly through a civic lottery, but demographically representative of the city, to all get in a room together and talk about important issues of local democracy, is the exact kind of thing that can help to create a civic culture. And so, you know, what Citizen University is talking about on the national scale, but trying to implement in communities all around the country, I'm really proud that Lexington has started down that path through Civic Lex and through the Civic Assembly.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU. Tell me no more lies, as if the slate is clean. I'm gonna read them my books, I'm gonna wrap them up tight. I can educate myself on the fight.